12, because there's a cover and there's one page that's got a photo, which I didn't want to waste the ink. So it's 12 printed pages of really good information, especially if you're just wading in to the action. Tony Black joins us now, and we'll be with Tony till the bottom of the hour when Dave Siegel joins us from Trackmaster. And Tony, good morning. How's everybody? Family? Everybody hanging in?
Good morning, Steve. Yeah, everybody's hanging in. I had to come out onto the front porch to find a quiet spot in the house between Kylie and the kids. I didn't want to sit in there and have you air some of their comments or some of their yelling and playing and everything else they're doing. So I'm sitting on the front porch. And before I got a phone call, I was listening to your last segment, and really interesting segment. And it really made me think there's so many different views of what racing's all about. And a lot of the different views are expressed by different people's their point of view. And one of the things that always comes to mind with me is people that wager on the sport and the gambling end of the sport, the handicappers end of the sport, sometimes have a totally different point of view than the athlete or the jockey that's directly involved, you know, with a horse in the sport. But it's interesting points of views, you know. So many time handicappers have an idea of a horse's performance, a jockey's performance, and how it is sometimes or many times a certain way. And then jockeys have a point of view is, yeah, when my performance becomes too predictable, sometimes I have to adjust and change. So it isn't as predictable to my fellow competitors. So a lot of things change in this business, and sometimes they change by accident, and sometimes they change on purpose. And then I was listening to when he was talking about how track biases and speed and time sometimes isn't absolutely directly affected by, let's say, the immediate onslaught of rain. And the reason sometimes track biases and speed figures aren't directly affected because it poured down rain and is it takes sometimes a little while for that moisture to do its job to a grass course, you know, or to a dirt track. When it comes to dirt tracks, immediate downpours or steady rains over a short period of time don't always change the track bias as soon as you would think, only because it takes time for moisture to work its way down into that track. And the way track superintendents handle those situations also plays into it. And turf track, with a turf course, the one thing that always came to mind, the length of the grass has an effect on how the base of the track absorbs the moisture. And the longer the grass, of course, it takes longer time for the moisture to be absorbed into the base of the turf to get it like yielding or soft, especially if it's listed as not yielding or hard. And the only thing moisture does to real long turf grass is sometimes riders get the idea that as the grass gets wet, and you know this just from a personal point of view, when grass gets wet, what does it usually do? Doesn't it get a little slicker? You know, if you walked on your front lawn and you had grass was 4 or 5 inches long and it poured down rain, and the grass gets slick. And if it's shorter, it doesn't get as slick. But riders figure that out going into a turn when they feel how their horse is handling that turn and the way the grass is affected by the moisture. But it's so interesting to hear, like I say, handicappers and people that wager on these races, their point of view. And sometimes we're both in the same, have the same idea. And sometimes we're directly opposite idea of how a race should run or how the moisture affects the track. It's just different points of view, but they're all interesting points of view. And every time you talk about racing in Hong Kong, it brings to mind one thing. Bill Hardtack, when he left the country and went to Hong Kong, and some of the reasons why he left is, I think he had some issues with the IRS, and it was easier to make a living over there. But that was at the end of his career. He was a character, and I'll tell you what, the little bit of time I got to ride with him, he was a learning experience. And as tough as people thought he was to communicate with, for some reason, him and I communicated pretty good. And the last time I saw him, we went to the suburban house at Pimlico to eat crabs, or was it maybe it was one of the other places. We wasn't Suburban House. We used to get crab cakes at the Suburban House. And Bo Brooks, we used to get crabs. And I think Hardtack, my brother, and I went and got crabs the last time before he went to Hong Kong.
Wow. I love it. I love it, Tony. I was going to, it's going to be, I'm not going to do it right now, but I was going to do some more follow-up with you as well regarding the 5/8 track. Tomorrow, Paul Matisse is going to join us because yesterday when I was talking to Chris Katulak at Fonner, it occurred to me, you know, to ask Paul, because he's got an affinity for the, you know, for the small tracks and even the fair circuits. I wanted to ask him about the 5/8 tracks, and I brought up that, you know, I'd asked you 2 weeks ago about riding 5/8. So we'll save that follow up because I really want to drive this home to people that, you know, continue to watch the races, particularly from Fonner, and just are not used to seeing racing on that circumference. And they're beating up on these jocks because they think that they're inept and you know that they're at a C track and on a C circuit and they must not be any good. But it's really unfair because there's something very different. There's dynamics that are completely different here. It has to do with the cornering ability of, you know, 6, 7, 8-year-old horses and so forth, and the way the horses bunch up on the turns. And there's just way more, opportunity for incident and for, you know, bumping and grinding on this 5/8 oval.
Absolutely, Steve. And, you know, the difference in these 5/8 tracks, too, that plays into it, is the depth and the speed of that particular racetrack even plays into it more than on a mile and a half racetrack. I can remember the first time, I don't know which track it was probably Shenandoah, and that was 5/8. They used to have Shenandoah and Charlestown right next to each other. First time I went and rode on a track like that, it was at Shenandoah. I think I had the bug or just lost the bug. And I was totally thrown back. I think I just lost the bug and we've maybe been riding a year. It was just like riding my first race. Everything was a blur to me, but I rode my first race at Liberty Bell on a mile racetrack. But believe me, when you ride your first race, you're not totally aware of what everything's going on around you. It's happening faster than what your mind eye can conceive. Now, I remembered that. I went to Shenandoah, and I've been riding whatever it was a year or two. This ain't nothing new. Yes, it was. It was the mind and the eye was directed and programmed for a mile racetrack type speed and distance. You know, we went so far at this speed for so much of a distance before we hit a turn. And all of a sudden you got to Shenandoah and you ran. And Shenandoah, if I remember correctly, was pretty fast for a small racetrack. It was a fast racetrack. You know, they never slowed it down that much. And I came back and I won the race. I actually won the race. It was from Margaret McLennan, and I think the horse's name was Toot Le Monde or Toot Sweet. I forget. But the whole race was a blur to me when I got back into the jockroom. And I remember I was riding at Garden State in the afternoon, and I went to Shenandoah that night and rode and drove 3.5 hours or whatever it was, 4 hours. My brother and I drove. But anyway, it is a different, a whole different thing riding on a smaller racetrack. And it's not only different for the jockeys. Horses, you know, they become tuned into it if they haven't been trained a lot or born and raised in that environment. I can remember riding a few horses, and I came back after the race and I guess it was either Timonium or maybe it was Dover or Pocono. Dover maybe it was. And I came back to my boss one day, and I said, you know what? Because they weren't running them at the mile racetrack at the time, and he would ship some horses to Dover. I said, hey, Charlie, you know, this horse just couldn't handle the turns. You know, it was just too much for him to get back leads, changing leads and all that. I said, he should have probably run better, but he just doesn't handle all these turns. And then I remember riding a horse, and I'm trying to think of what her name was. And I came back. I said, Charlie, this horse can run around the turns as fast as it runs straight. I can't believe it. I've never been on a horse like this. He says, He said, "Son, you ain't been on a lot of horses and done a lot of things." He says, "I told you, I can't remember the names of these horses, but they made an impression on me at the time. And this one horse, I'm telling you, Steve, he could run as fast around a turn as he could straight. And that was strictly like an ability that certain horses had. And they would call, you know, oh, he's a true halfer. Boy, this gun is a true half mile type horse." And it didn't matter how far he was running. He could just run around the turns as fast as he could run straight. And that was amazing. And then there was the tracks that, like Marlboro. And I rode at Marlboro. I'll never forget. I win, I think one of the first races I won there was a stake race on a horse called Sherbrooke for Barkley Tag. And it was in a dead heat with Tony Aganello and me. We finished in a dead heat in a stake race, $15,000 pot. Boy, we were living. But anyway, Marlboro was a track that you didn't think the same way as you did on Timonium Racetrack, or as you did at Dover or Shenandoah or Charlestown. Marlboro was almost 3/4 of a mile. It might have been a 3/4 of a mile track if it wasn't, but it was slow. They kept it so slow, Steve, that you didn't have that same, eye, brain, speed coordination that you had on the fast, smaller tracks. It was like riding a mile track that was only 3/4 of a mile long because it was so slow and you had time, you know, to do things. You weren't automatically leaving the gate and running into the first turn within a few seconds and turn around, coming out of the turn, running down the backside. You know, you had more time to think only because the track was slower. But you still didn't do the stupid things by the time you were going into the last turn. You still didn't try to get up on the inside of three horses when you better sit behind them, you know, because horses, or you didn't try to come around one at the elbow coming out of the turn at coming out of the turn. You waited till we straightened out and then pulled out, went around him, or went to the inside. Because if you went around him coming out of the turn, and if you went around a lot of jocks, they parked you. And just as they were parking you at the elbow of the turn, coming out of the turn, the stretch, running down the stretch to the wire, they parked you on the outside fence. They had you, your horse's momentum going outwardly, and then they made their horse pop him over to his right lead, and he dropped in and left you sitting out there like a dummy. So there was different techniques that riders rode with on the smaller racetracks, on the 5/8, the 3/4 of a mile tracks, especially the 5/8 tracks that were fast. But it was really neat, Steve.
Well, and we ran a little late with Dick and Marcus because I do want to expand, and I want you to even we can't do it right now, but maybe
sorry,
next week.
No, not at all.
In fact, I want to see if there's a way that, you know, you can help people understand even what kind of horse can corner and what, you know, is it a smaller, you know, twitchy type? Is it a, you know, are the big rangy types, you know, that we think of when we talk about Belmont? I mean, the inverse of this conversation, of course, is Belmont Park and the mile and a half where, you know, the turns are so wide and so sweeping that visually people don't even realize they're on a turn. It's one of the reasons people get lost at Belmont and make mistakes and move too early. And if they aren't familiar, I mean, we could have that, you know, that other discussion because you've ridden enough at Belmont over the years.
Right.
But this 5/8 discussion, I'm gonna drive this home because people are watching Fawner and they think that there's something wrong, that the stewards are no good, the judges are useless, the riders are idiots, and the trainers are none of that is true.
It's a different game, and nobody's seen it.
Tony, we don't have, we're down to like no, some of the fares, you know, and a lot of people never even look at the fares when they're running, but there's just very few opportunities with Fairplex gone. Fairplex used to be, you know, the annual, Paul will make this point tomorrow, Paul Matisse. Fairplex used to be an annual stop, and people would see 5/8 at racing, but they haven't seen it for several years, and they just are unfamiliar, as opposed to, you know, making assumptions about what they're looking at. It's not fair. And if you take the time, you might be able to figure out, you know, who the players are that are, you know, that are understanding the dynamics better and why they're winning more.
Right. Now, you know, I can remember years ago you would see the horses, that the particular horse, he'd be the king of the halfers. You
right.
know?
Right.
And you used to see that. And then you saw riders that also were, you know, labeled as, man, he's a half mile ride, and that's so big, boy. You can really ride. You know, guys like being from the past, and I had to just mention his name, was Tony Aganello. He did good in Maryland, you know, and survived and did well at the Mahlers. But when he hit the Timonium meet, he would kill him. When he hit Marlboro, you know, oh, Aganello, he's a half mile riding son of a gun. And there was riders that were labeled. You know, I came around on the farm, and there was a rider that was a half mile rider that came to Maryland and left, and my dad, when he got rid of the horse fans in the transition, he was an agent for a very short period of time. And I'll tell you the rider's name, because maybe you know it or maybe you don't. But Willie Clark, he was a Charlestown-bred, Shenandoah-bred, half-mile riding son of a gun. And my dad took him to Maryland, and they were doing really good. And one day he just doesn't show up. He says, I got to go home. I can't be riding at these mile tracks. I can remember on the farm, him and his daughter and my brother and me, we'd be in our little coach or our little ponies riding around the farm. And God bless his daughter. I mean, she got killed in a car accident as a teenager.
Yeah.
But anyway, old Willie Clark and Dottie, his wife. And he could have made it at the Mahlers. He was a good rider. In fact, when I started riding, he watched me and he would, you know, call me and say, hey, Black, what are you doing? You know, did you forget how to be a jockey? What were you doing there? And then what were you doing here? But Willie Clark, and they stayed at the halfers, but it wasn't lacking ability. That was their home. That was bred into them. That's what they wanted to do. Maybe I can relate to it because maybe I fell into that category, and that's why I stayed at Keystone Philadelphia Park and Parks, and only left to go to Jersey once in a while, New York once in a while, went every track in the country once in a while, but stayed there as a home base. But it's amazing, though, how certain horses and certain riders, really their strengths are at these tracks that we say are inferior or third rate. And believe me, Steve, they aren't. It just takes a certain person and a certain horse to be productive there and understand how to be a jockey there and a horse to understand how to run there. But I'll never forget that first one. I said, man, Charlie, this horse can run around the turns as fast as he can run straight. And then you brought up a good point. Being at Belmont Park is like running straight around a turn. It's like running straight.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, horses visually, yeah. Horses,
yeah. Like running,
they get lost.
They get lost, but on these fast bullring type tracks, and you know, years ago there was even ones that were just a little over a half mile, or actually a half mile track, and that's what they were called, halfers. Can you imagine that, a fast track that was a half mile? The Timonium wasn't originally 5/8; it was under 5/8, and they extended it, I believe, to 5/8 or whatever it is now, or was. It does take a certain horse, and my boss, one thing about it, he came around, he's still my boss, you know, 50 years later, my boss, Charlie Coco, he came around and raced on every kind of, and rode a little bit, and rode on every kind of race track there was, and trained every kind of horse there was, and the one thing he told me years ago, he was, yeah, you know what? You're going to learn a lot if you stay in this business long enough. And here I am 50 years later. And I'm still,
exactly.
He got me my first license in 67. Can you believe that? Garden State in 67. I was working hot for Charlie Coco, Buddy Lutman, you know, guy Charlie Sanborn, those guys.
Now, Tony.
I enjoy it. Steve. Thank you so much.
Well, no, this is great, and I'm on a tight schedule today, but this is a topic we'll continue with because they're going to keep racing at Fonner into May through May. They got approval yesterday, as we talked, and as they expected from the Nebraska Racing Commission. Tampa waiting for approval from whatever entity in Florida is going to approve their expansion and their running into May as well. So we'll catch up next week, Tony, and I appreciate the insights as always. Stay safe.
Thank you, Steve, and I enjoy you more than you probably enjoy me. You take care. Keep up the good work.
Not at all.
Bye.
Tony Black, everybody. Let's take a break. We got a lot to do yet. Dave Siegel is going to join us from San Francisco, and Dave, of course, at president of Trackmaster, and we're going to get a detailed update and status report on the GPS tracking system that is very steadily rolling out. The information is being distilled into Equibase charts that are available right now. If you go to Equibase's website, I'll send out a link to one of the ones particularly I wanted one that's a little extreme. So I think we'll look at the Count Fleet. We'll use that, and that'll be the easiest way. So let me get that sent out to everybody. And Dave Siegel joins us next. A lot to cover. Eric Hamelback later, as well as Rich Eng, second half at the races. Sirius XM, back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number1st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
If you are racing two-year-olds in California and Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Here in Pennsylvania, we have the best breeding program in the country, thanks in part to our Racehorse Development Trust Fund. It's a trust, it's not tax dollars, and by law, our fund is completely protected. These are difficult days for all of us. When life in America gets back to normal, and it will, our PA breeding program will be here, stronger and better than ever. To learn more about how we're protecting the trust, go to PABred.com to watch a short video.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Fletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really?
Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Darley America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow. What other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races, 20 minutes to the top of the hour, and consider this a follow-up to the conversation we had last, I think, spring or early summer, and Trackmasters Dave Siegel joins us. Dave, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Happy to be on the show with you.
Well, and I think the timing was really good because you've expanded the GPS program. We talked about the initial. I remember seeing the article, I think, in Blood Horse originally, and reaching out, and you gave us the, you know, the framework of the concept. And now to see it in practice and to see the, I just wrote up, you know, the information that's been distilled and will, you know, continue to evolve from the GPS project, to see it in chart form, it's pretty exciting. And I'm sure it's gratifying for you and the team, you know, to get to this next step.
It's been a really interesting journey, and we've come really far. I can tell you I'm personally frustrated in that, as everybody is, but had it not been for the virus, we would have been that much further. We've had to delay a couple of really key installations because of this, and we'll be playing catch-up hopefully in the next couple of months to get out there. But we're in double-digit tracks right now, and we continue to try to improve the accuracy of the systems and the sharpness of the graphics. And you made reference to the charts, so we've had these charts all along internally, and they're not as perfect right now as we'd like them to be, but we wanted to give the public some insight as to the depth, I call it the depth and breadth of data that is going to be available. And when I talk about depth, I think about things that aren't currently being recorded out there or are, but in very small numbers. And when I talk about breadth, I kind of think about it like points of call, you know, and now there's, you know, typically three or four during a race. And as you would see in the charts that we have up there, we'll be recording or at least making public data every 16th of a mile. And underlying that, we actually have data that's step by step for each horse.
Let's give everybody first the reminder or the refresher, and certainly there's people listening and are hearing about this for the first time. Give everybody the, you know, the original concept, the framework, and what the, you know, the major goals of the concept was going in, and maybe even how they've changed a little bit, and you know, where we are now.
Sure. So let me start. Yeah, this will, I'll go on for a couple of minutes. But let me start at 30,000
sure.
feet. And we had two major goals here. One was to be able to provide more data, as I said, depth and breadth to the horse player. You know, it's the existing fan who has this ongoing thirst for knowledge. And by and large, racing hasn't gone to greater depths in terms of that data. Trackus has to some degree. It's just not that widespreadly available. Plus, they're only at, if my tally is right, 11 thoroughbred tracks in North America. So they do have the largest tracks, but it's still not a substantive enough critical mass to be all that useful to players, and we're very, very player-focused. We're also interested in the other side of the coin, which is, you know, the public at large, and we try to make the provide data such that that data can be turned into interesting visuals, in particular during the race. But to be able to make the video broadcasts more compelling than they are, like Trackus has done to some degree. And there's also kind of relative to the somewhere in between is, while not that popular or widely available in this country yet, it is, I believe, in New Jersey to some degree, the fixed odds wagering, this data is happening real time. So another opportunity here is for in-race wagering. It's not happening here yet, but it's happening overseas, and it would provide an opportunity to have greater handle on our tracks and help out, you know, our overall horse economy. And one of the things that you really need to have in-race, really solid in-race betting, is to provide up to the second, or maybe it's tenth of a second, data for people who are looking online. So, for example, if somebody thought about the speeds of the horses and that a horse needed to run more evenly than, let's say, differentially quarter by quarter, it may be interesting to see the horse's average speeds, you know, at every 16th of a mile when it gets to the half of a one-mile race. And this stuff can happen really, really quickly. And somebody may say, okay, this horse has been running, quote-unquote, a little slower than his average or whatever going into at the halfway point, I'm going to place a wager because I can get 7-1 on this horse, overall, but seeing it at the halfway point. But so by and large, let me come back around. We're focused on those kind of two groups, the players to provide more information, the hopefully or potential fan to provide a better visual experience. So to that degree, we've at Equibase has been looking over many, many years to do those things, and have more accurate information, because as the listeners may or may not know, charts have been by and large put together by humans looking through binoculars, you know, not other than the finish line, which is photo finish, but they're looking at the order. And the lengths behind, and they're really, really, really good at it, but it's still the human eye, and looking at 12 horses, or in the case of the Derby, 20 horses, is a difficult thing to do. So we're hoping to bring a greater layer of accuracy to things as well. So Trackus does a pretty nice job of that. Not perfect, but a pretty nice job. The issue is Trackus was just way too expensive. They quickly got to 11 tracks, thoroughbred tracks, and haven't added anything, and it's because their technology is very good, but very, very expensive. Might have been like cell phones were, or car phones were, you know, back in the 60s, and they existed. They did exist, but they were really expensive, and now you have a new technology, cell phones, and it's affordable. So in this case, we've been eyeing alternative technologies since the inception of Equibase. Nick Nicholson talks about this every board meeting that I had ever been in, and I've been at them the last 20-something years. And we kept our eye on GPS, but it was never, A, affordable enough, at least what we thought for racetracks, what they were willing to pay, and that they weren't accurate enough. And those things started to come together about 3 years ago. And I won't bore you with the process, but we looked at a number of companies and formed a partnership with one company about 3 years ago. And we have four, I told you the broad items, but four particular uses of the data. One is charting, so more accurate charting. Two is a data feed for graphics. 3 is to use the GPS system to time races. And the fourth one, which is a little bit in the future, but we have experimented with it, and that's to provide, use the GPS system for workouts. And I'll just touch on that for a second. Imagine workouts being much more like a chart for a single horse, like a complete running line, rather than it just ran 3 furlongs in 36.85. It would have much, much, much deeper information, potentially the run-up speed before the workout, the exit speed, what I'll call it after the workout, potentially who the rider was, times every 16th of a mile, just greater depth of data. But right now, we have to get in at tracks first, so we're not focused on workouts, but workouts will come. So we kind of call that the four pillars. That's probably the words I use whenever we spoke last, Steve. So our goal then is penetration. And so we went into Golden Gate Fields as our initial track about 2 years ago and have been the timing system there ever since. And I know we spoke yesterday. I don't have the list in front of me, but we are in and working at about 10 tracks right now. And are contractually obligated to start at 3 or 4 other ones. So those are all kind of signed deals, and they include some biggies. You know, we're providing data for graphics right now at Oaklawn, one of the two premier meets, I'd say, that are left over, meaning they're still racing right now. We will be doing the timing and the graphic generation, not ourselves, but through TVG for Del Mar when they open up. Well, let's say hopefully open up this July. California's Governor Newsom's orders notwithstanding, we're hoping that they'll open up. We are installed up at Woodbine, obviously the Canadian number one track. So we're getting very, very nice penetration. So between the tracks that we're at and the tracks that we're contracted for, we're up to around 14 or so, 15 in that neighborhood, and obviously having discussions with many, many other tracks. I know I'm going on, but you asked about kind of an update. And another real
sure.
piece of the update is that one of the things that we found that was a slight obstacle to penetrating as fast as we would like were the existing timing contracts that racetracks had. And some of these things were like 4 or 5 years.
Hmm.
So while we could go into those tracks for graphics only, it really didn't make a whole lot of economic sense to put that infrastructure in just for one item. We really want to be supplying timing and graphics at tracks to make this thing economical for both sides. Since we view the days of the beam systems are numbered, we have always had a fantastically cordial relationship with American Teletimer. I would say the market share leader in timing systems, and International Sound a second, but not a distant second. And we continued to work together, and in the end, Trackmaster acquired the timing assets of American Teletimer, which will make it much easier for us to move tracks from the, we'll call it the old beam system, into GPS without having that contractual obstacle in front of us. So that deal was completed in January. So now Trackmaster technically is the official timer at a large number. I think it's 52 racetracks. We are still using Teletimer employees and track employees to operate it, so nobody would know really any significant difference other than how the money is flowing behind the scenes. But that gives us a great opportunity to get into these tracks, and it also vaults us into the harness business in terms of timing. And we, Equibase, enjoys a very, very, and Trackmaster, of course, a great relationship with the USTA. So we'll be looking to, I'll say, convert some of those tracks, and I'm happy to announce that the Meadowlands is signed, and we will be putting our system in for timing and graphics there. They are the, I think there the graphics is going to be generated by their graphic provider, which is International Sound, and we'll be feeding the data to them. So you'll be seeing enhanced graphics. I don't like to say Trackus-like graphics, but some of those types of things that you might have seen at the Meadowlands, and hopefully, you know, the other top-tier tracks that we're talking to on the Standardbred side as well. So, you know, our ultimate goal is, I guess I would say, get to nearly every track, you know, 2 or 3 years from now, that GPS systems would be the standard at racetracks. I can't say they all would be smaller tracks that aren't interested in upgrading the beam systems, and no graphics will probably be there for some time. But it's our goal. I think the goal was something like, Steve, it's between 90 and 95% of the handle, of thoroughbred handle, would be covered by GPS installations, you know, 3 years down the road. So now when you get back to data, okay, and you get back to horse players, now we believe you have a critical mass, okay, that Trackus doesn't really have right now. And we think that from both sides of the equation, then for the horse player and for the fan and the visual enhancements, we think it'll be a positive thing overall for racing. And relative to Trackus, which, as I said, topped out at 11 tracks, it's not that expensive. And Equibase has made this, I can't get into real details on pricing here, but Equibase has made this very affordable for the racetracks with no upfront fees. So I know your listeners don't care too much about the cost of this stuff, but it's a very, very, very manageable cost. And in fact, I would say if there was a new track going in, let's say with, and I know there won't be many, with turf lanes gets very complicated to do with the beam system, very complicated. You need a set of timers or beams for every turf lane distance combination that you have at the racetrack and for every point of call that you want. With GPS, without getting into the technical side, it's all virtual. There's nothing down on the racetrack. It's all using computers to program, right, like position of where the you know, theoretic timing eyes would be. So, you know, if there was a new track, I have no question of a doubt that GPS would be less expensive than the beam system, you know, putting wires under the track and all that kind of stuff. And then you'd also get all the other benefits of the more detailed charts, more accurate charts, and the visuals that can come from it. So I spewed on a long – I bet you didn't expect that long an answer.
No.
But that's how we got to where we are, and we're executing quite well on it.
And I'll give everybody the complete list. Woodbine, Sam Houston, Oaklawn, Colonial, Penn National, Laurel and Pimlico, Del Mar, Mahoning Valley, and coming, you mentioned Meadowlands, so the harness side is moving forward, and Canterbury and Kentucky Downs are the next installations, and when racing resumes in Minnesota and out at Kentucky Downs, they'll be incorporated as well. Let's shift from the mechanical and the development side of things to the practical application and what these, you know, the immediate benefit and what's available for horse players right now to interpret and to utilize, because it you know, much like when Trackus was introduced, you know, there was a bit of a learning curve, and you know, there's some areas that these charts offer that really have never been available before from any, you know, in any resource. So I'd love for you to, you know, kind of go through the, you know, the various chart options and, you know, what kind of useful info is going to be immediately available to the kinds of people that, you know, that know how to utilize this information.
Sure. So first of all, we've taken what I would say is a bit of a shortcut on the charts. So when people go to the Equibase site and look up a chart, they can look at, I'll call it the traditional Equibase chart in PDF form. And I just so everybody knows, those charts are available for free. They go back forever, not forever, but a long time, certainly for every horse that's racing today. And every single race, every chart that is available to the public. The shortcut we took is we took our what I'll call internal chart, which is produced by one of our GPS partners called GMAX, which is a UK-based company. And we've been using these for internal purposes. Someday, in the not-too-distant future, these will change with much of the same functionality, possibly more functionality, but will be actually offered up by technically by TrackMaster, but they could, because it's TrackMaster-owned data, but they can get it through, people can get it through the Equibase web chart in a slightly more familiar-looking form. But the first thing to say about the charts, those future ones, but I'll just focus on the ones now, is that the charts are interactive. So by that I mean the Equibase charts are a fixed PDF, and you can print them out or view them on the screen, and there's nothing you can do with them. They're very valuable, but other than to just kind of look at them and internalize the data, you can't sort that type of stuff. So the charts that I'll refer to as the GMAX chart, which is synonymous to say the Equibase / TrackMaster GPS charts, have sorting capabilities for each of the fields. When I use the word breadth, we have, to use a traditional word, points of call at every half furlong, no matter how long that race is. So, some players in particular may look at a quarter mile and say, that's kind of a long time. I want to know what happens within a quarter mile, and we'll have three additional readings, if you will, of horse activity within a quarter mile. So that's one really tremendous change. The other major piece of it is that the charts have sliced up not just the timing data, and even that's new. I should point that out, because the traditional data is lengths. Either lengths, Equibase has two versions of the charts, lengths back, which is the more PP line traditional, or lengths ahead, which is more the track traditional, and that is in these charts. But we also time each horse. Now, in regular races, there's only one horse that's timed, the first horse who breaks the beam, and then at the finish line, the horse who breaks the beam, that's the finishing time, and then the photo finish camera does time the differences between the horses, and that's how you get the lengths back. Here we're timing every horse, every stride individually, because each horse is carrying a tracker, and those trackers are able to tell the time at any point in the racetrack. So that's one big feature of the charts, is that you can look at the times of the horse, and you can look at those times either by every 16th of a mile or cumulatively. And so if you look at the cumulative, it will add up to the time of the individual horse. And so obviously the winner's individual time will match the overall race time. That's a biggie. Another one we've taken a look at is distance. And so each horse, same thing, has the distance run and the cumulative distance run. We're still working on some of the math on this to get it exactly right. But this is something that you've seen with Trackus. But this is one that we have debated internally, and I'll go off on a tangent for a minute here. Assuming that the distance run numbers are perfectly accurate, one might think a horse that ran a further distance kind of should be normalized with a faster speed rating or adjustment to one that ran less. And so let's just take a hypothetical, a perfect run on a mile race, a horse would run 5,280 feet. And say you had another one that ran 5,310 feet, so they ran 30 feet further, or let's just round about four lengths, okay, something like that, 3 to 4 lengths. And you may say, okay, all other things equal, that horse who ran the 3 to 4 lengths really should be sped up to compensate for that that going a further distance aground. The reality might be, while all that might be very true, the reality might be that the jock specifically took a path, not necessarily jockeying for position, but that he thought was just faster piece of ground. And I can tell you this firsthand as a harness driver. There were times where I thought, you know, like the number four lane down the stretch, let's say, or around the second turn and down the stretch, was favorable to the number two lane, even though the two lane was open and you know around the turn you're going less distance. But maybe that two lane was a little bit soft from rain the night before, and the four lane closer to the center of the crown of the track was harder, and I would ultimately get to the finish line further. Excuse me, faster if I went further. So I think people have to take that one kind of with a grain of salt. And maybe the further distance run is actually better because it shows the track, the jock found something. Or the flip side is, you know, the horse just blew the turn and ran out further. So this is stuff that folks can use to research. And I can tell you, we haven't researched it. You know, is distance run a critical factor to a winner? It may turn out to be inversely related for all we know. But the interesting thing is that that data is going to be out there, and people and players can look at it and play with it. And then the last area to mention, there's this device in the tracker called an accelerometer. I don't know what the hell that is, frankly. That's above my pay grade, but I can tell you what it does. Okay, it does measure the length of the stride of the horse. So within that, you can look at, like, how many strides a horse took, you know, by section or cumulatively. You can look at the average stride length. You can look at an average strides per second in different sections of the race. So once again, we have not investigated this one yet, so we don't know what the model looks like for the fastest possible race. You know, it may be, stride length has to be maintained evenly throughout the entire race, and that causes a horse to run the fastest. I don't know. Or maybe the ideal is, you know, the stride length is X in the first quarter and X times 10% or plus 10% in the second and third quarters and 0.9X down the lane. And that horses that ran in that pattern, you know, had a better chance than horses that didn't. I don't know how that's going to turn out. The data's never been there. And that's kind of the point of all of this, that people can potentially mine this data and find, I would expect, that they would find interesting things, just like pace data was years ago. So that's all the, at least right now, the playing that can be done with the horses. There's other things that we have in our heads, not in there yet, that have to do with the biomechanics of a horse. And there are devices out there today that have heart rates, and I know some trainers use that, and they come back, and just like humans have those type of, you know, Apple Watches and the Fitbits, blah, blah, blah. And there's no reason out in the future one couldn't hook these things up and have them transmitted from the tracker in real time and saved on the tracker and add that type of data. And you know, I don't know enough about it to tell you that, you know, it could be heart rate, breathing rate, oxygen, whatever, like humans can get, that type of thing. That type of stuff is all out there and potential to all tie into a system like this.
The categories, and I'll run those down too, because you mentioned the stride, which, I just don't think has been widely available before, but sectional times, cumulative time, average speed, distance run, cumulative distance run, lengths back, lengths ahead, number of strides, cumulative number of strides, average stride length, and average strides per second. Those are all the, and that looks like, what, 10 different presentations. In the lower right hand corner, you've got the opportunity. There's a menu of choosing data. Choose data,
right,
and drop down or pop up. There's one, this is strictly a technical question. the slide bar to go from, and I suppose you know, part of that is because of the half furlong designations. It seems it's a little cumbersome trying to slide back and forth.
No, I disagree with you. It's not a little cumbersome. It's a lot
okay.
cumbersome. How's that?
Oh, okay. Thank you. All right.
It's a lot cumbersome. Like I said,
yeah, okay.
so we wanted to get something out into the public's hand, and this is what we use internally. When Equivace and TrackMaster get around to basically taking this same type of data and putting it into our kind of format, that will change. So, and what does that mean? I can't tell you. 6 months, a year, somewhere in there. So one thing, if you notice currently on the chart, you can't make the whole chart wider. And there's no reason why you can't. I mean, I'm looking at it on a widescreen monitor right now. You know, even a one-mile race with 16 points a call, that would all fit if we could just stretch the thing out. So, yes, that will happen. But we wanted to get something up there more quickly. I would hope also one of the things that we can do, and this we haven't spec'd out what our taking of the data and putting it in our own formatted chart would look like. But, you know, I'd want to be able to, one is click a button and show the traditional chart points of calls, okay? So the quarter, the half, the three quarters, the top of the stretch, finish.
Right.
Another one I'd want to say, well, just show me every furlong and not every half furlong and have that show up. Kind of, it's basically hiding columns is what we're talking about there. And then, of course, we'd want it to be, you'd want to be able to see as much as you could on a screen. Now, granted, a two-mile race, maybe that doesn't go in. Maybe you click the button and say, well, just show me every furlong in the two-mile race, you know, and then you'll get the 16 columns. So that's all out there and will come. I agree with you. It's cumbersome. And, in fact, one of the questions I asked our developers was that, okay, can we at least, oh, when you open the screen with the slide bar, get it over to the right so you see the finish? I'd rather see the finish as the first thing. But so
right.
those things will come in time. We thought it was important to show the public this. And I'll be frank for two reasons. One, we do like feedback. And there's going to be errors in charts, just like there's errors in charts now. None of these things are absolutely perfect. So when there's errors, we do like to hear about them. But we also like to get feedback. As, oh, can you show this? Or I'd rather see it this way. That way, when it's time for Equibase and TrackMaster to build out our chart displaying the same data, we've already gotten 6 months of public feedback and can serve up something really, really nice, right from the giddy up.
From what we've got now, and there's always the adjustment factor of just, you know, the visuals and understanding what people are looking at. But if you had to pick, Dave Siegel with us from TrackMaster and, you know, Equibase investing in this GPS program, we first introduced this conversation a year and a half ago as it started to, you know, filter into the racetracks and you know, there started to be awareness of, you know, of the curve at which this was being, you know, developed. And we have to also talk about workouts, too, because that was a big part of the introductory discussion. But if you had to suggest to people, Dave, what this first, these layers of you know, charting information provides, what is the most useful information at a glance that people will be able to interpret, you know, most quickly?
I think the sectional times of the horses, if I had to pick one. One, it's very interesting to look at a number of races and to see just the overall patterns, particularly by distance, how horses are using up their energy. It's not always what you think it might be. Let me give you an example. Like, I would have thought that. So what I'm about to say is by observation, not by, you know, scientific method of large data sizes. But my observation has been that horses are running first quarters in terms of time at a particular track in almost across all races in similar times, and the sections of those first quarters also, once they are getting up to speed from the run-ups, in similar times. So if I was to look at, say, the first, like the third and fourth 16th of a mile of a race and look at those speeds, they're fairly similar independent of the length of the race. And that is something that I did not expect to find. I'm not sure how I'd use it in handicapping, but, you know, I would have thought that horses going a mile were running slower in that third and fourth 16th of a mile than those that were going 4.5 or 5 furlongs. And for the most part, that proved out not to be the case. They're like all going the same speed pretty much in those portions of the race. And another thing that proved interesting, and this is something that is not in these GPS charts that are up there right now. So there's a lot of stuff missing from these charts, not in terms of the data, but in terms of what the Equibase charts have. You know, the Equibase charts have the full condition on it, right? The Equibase chart has the run-up, for example. Okay, so that's what I'm saying. When we get to the full chart, we'll have all that stuff plus this other stuff, and we're just not there yet. But you get to see the effects of run-up on times of races or times in that first quarter. And so you can't just look at it, and I know you know this, and say, wow, this horse ran a 21-second first quarter. Wow, that's really fast. Well, you know, the horse had a, let's say, 300-foot run-up. It's not that fast. And, you know, we reflect all this in our speed ratings already and in our pace ratings, the effect of the run-up. But you get to see it a little bit more when you have both charts open and know, hey, it's a really short run-up. So, hey, that's why it's 24 seconds. Or again, it's not so much they're running pretty much full speed at the quarter. But you look at that first 16th of a mile and you say, oh, here's a bunch of slow ones and here's a bunch of fast ones. What's going on? And you relate it back to the run-up and say, well, now I know exactly what's going on and why. It's the run-up, you know, that's causing greatly different speeds for that first 16th of a mile. And the charts give you that insight.
And that actually begs a question. Is there going to be a way, out of curiosity, to net out run-up?
Well, yes. The run-up is... Well, the run-up today is netted out of the Equibase speed rating and the Trackmaster pace ratings, because Equibase doesn't do the pace rating, so we do the equivalent of speed rating for the first quarter, and we take into account the run-up. And the way we bring everything back to the average run-up, which I think is about 48 feet, something like that, okay? So we normalize to make everything average. So if there was a horse who had a 100-foot run-up, we would slow that time down, okay, to normalize, because that horse had too much of a head start, basically. And if it's less than 48, we'll speed it up by a formula that we've come up with by studying acceleration rates of horses. And one of the great places to study that, by the way, are quarter horses. And so, well, one way to study it is to go out there with 100 horses with a stopwatch and do it. We actually conducted an experiment, or not an experiment, studies years ago, because quarter horses go from a dead stop. You know, they go from an open gate and are timed, and we're able to see what those segments look like. We basically have a formula for the acceleration of the average horse, and then adjust it for the best horses and down a little bit for the worst horses. So that reflects the run-up. So it's translated in our speed and pace ratings.
No, just curious, because the run-up element it can be a, you know, that can be a vexing portion of, you know, of a lot of this.
Yeah.
The benefit here, obviously, I mean, the benefits are, I mean, there's so many portions of this, and we won't get to.
Steve, are you still there? There, Steve, are you back? This may be the radio glitch.
Hey, this is Casey in the control room. I lost Steve. Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and send the show to break, okay? If you could stand by for me, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Yep.
Thank you, sir.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
If you are racing two-year-olds in California and Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Here in Pennsylvania, we have the best breeding program in the country, thanks in part to our Racehorse Development Trust Fund. It's a trust, it's not tax dollars, and by law, our fund is completely protected. These are difficult days for all of us. When life in America gets back to normal, and it will, our PA breeding program will be here, stronger and better than ever. To learn more about how we're protecting the trust, go to PABred.com to watch a short video.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Fletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Darley America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow. What other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number1st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.